Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to go ahead and get started. Thank you for being here. I've got a handout. I made about 18 handouts, so we've kind of scattered them around there. I will put these pictures up online. This will be a PDF online right by the video and the MP3, and I'll make the pictures larger. I didn't realize how small. I was printing them off real fast, but I put this little picture together with some writing on the top up there. They're really small. I'll read it to you here in just a moment. But it'll be a lot larger online and easier to see. But I'll explain this in just a minute. I've got Jim and Deb's copy here. I'll get this right back to you in just a moment. But I'll pray, and then I'll kind of show you what's on those pictures, and then we'll go through the story of Samson and kind of detail a few things here for you. But let me pray, and we'll get started. Father, we come to you tonight in the name of Jesus, and we thank you again for the chance to meet. We thank you for the Word of God that is before us. We thank you for your faithfulness to us and how you've revealed yourself to us in history and in your Scriptures and in our own lives and revealed Jesus Christ to us. We ask that we may understand these things, that we may learn from the stories of Samson and his and the way you dealt with him and the way he responded, that we may learn to walk obedient to you and fulfill the purposes you've given to us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, before we jump into the story, I do want to point these things out right here. Again, this is a sketchy map up here, but we're talking about a lot about the Sorek Valley. Right here, I've just wrote Sorek Valley. It means the valley of the good wine or the good vines right here. And it's a valley that extends over into the plain. It runs through the hills of the Judean hills. Here is Zoar right here. Zoar, that's where Samson's going to be from. Right across the valley runs right between Zoar and Beth Shemesh. And if you look on the pictures right here, you can see the very first picture there is a picture of Beth Shemesh, an excavation taking place at Beth Shemesh. And that's Marion and Marilyn right there at the excavation site. They're standing right here with the Sorek Valley on this side. And the year that we were there in 2012, that coin, or actually a seal, you can see the seal right there. I didn't take that picture. I took that off the internet. The other pictures are mine, but I took that image of that seal. Marilyn and Marion did not find that seal, but it was found that same summer at that excavation. And what it is, I've got in the writing right there, I'll read it to you what I wrote there. Archaeologists discovered while excavating this at Beth Shemesh, so this was found right here at Beth Shemesh. It appears to depict an Old Testament story of Samson. Now, this was found at the layer of right around 1050 B.C. That was where it was found. Sometime between 1000 B.C. and 1100 B.C. And so we're not going to say that this belonged to Samson by any means, but on the coin you can see there is a lion-like figure, and the archaeologists agree with that, and it's either fighting with or a man is fighting the lion. So it's a man and lion fighting. And this is the valley, the Sorek Valley that Samson traveled in. It would have been this valley right here, right in this area where he would have killed the lion. And this is where that seal was found. From the same time period. It was found, or not the same time period, but within 50 to 75 years of that event. So it would have been had time for that story to become legendary at that, you know, and been marked and used in some kind of a seal. Basically, it just says, what else it says? It says it's found right near the Sorek Valley. Now, if you look at the picture right down in the very middle at the bottom, again, you can see the middle picture at the bottom. You can see, again, the excavation site that we have. And now we're looking at it from this direction here. And you can see in the background the Sorek Valley. And you can see, like, kind of the fields there. And I've got a couple pictures. If you go to the bottom right, very bottom right, you can see the tent or the sun, the protective layer of the tent. That's that excavation site. I've got the Sorek Valley marked, and then I've got it pointing towards Philistia over here. So you can see that the valley with the crops and the wheat or whatever's in there and heading this way. That's that bottom picture on the right. If you go over to the left side of the page, the middle picture kind of on the left, it's got marked on there, it says east. That's looking this way, and now we're standing right there in Beth Shemesh. I'm standing right in Beth Shemesh, taking a picture over the top of the Sorek Valley at three hills right here. And on top of that hill, right where the tree kind of breaks a little bit, where I've got written the word Zoar, that is the location of Zoar. That's where Samson's family was from. That's where Samson was born, and he would come down the hill, walk in that Sorek Valley, over this way towards Philistia. He's eventually, I've got my map all messed up already, but right here is Timnah. He's going to meet someone from Timnah, and that's where he's going to come over and start messing with the Philistines in that area. There's one more picture you can see, and that's the far right one. It's very similar to the one we've got on the far left. I've got Zoar marked. I've got the Sorek Valley marked. And again, we're standing in Beth Shemesh with an arrow pointing towards the land of the Philistines over here. So there's some pictures right there. Sorry, I used yours. There's just one there. That's just a little bit of a background. So these things are still in place. We know where Zoar's at. We know where Beth Shemesh is at. We know where Ashkelon is at. We know where Ashdod is at. In fact, we know where Gaza is at. Further down here, Gaza, we know where that's at. Also Gath. We've located those, or they've located. We were at Gezer. That's enough of that map. You know, of course, this star right here is Jerusalem. So with that background, let's go ahead and review chapter 13 of Judges. And we'll hopefully we'll get through the whole story of Samson. We're just, again, there's 1,000 things you could talk about in the story of Samson. I just kind of want to review it and continue moving through. We've probably got 3 more nights in the book of Judges. We'll see tonight and then 2 more nights. We should be able to finish the book of Judges, and that all depends on how things develop. Okay, chapter 13, verse 1. Again, I've got this dated right around 1100, 1125 B.C. when this begins. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Verse 2, a certain man of Zoar named Manoah, so right there on the map, Zoar, had a wife and who was sterile and remained childless. And we went through this last week. And what basically happens is the angel of the Lord appears and tells her she's going to be with child. And he's going to be a Nazarite from birth, which means she nor him are to drink any wine or have anything to do with grapes. Of course, look where they're living. They're living in the Sorek Valley, which means the good wine, the good vines. I mean, right there, it's like, that good wine right there, I don't drink any of that. It's like, well, why don't you go somewhere where there's not good wine, you know? So Beth Shemesh is here again, and Zoar is here, and this is the Sorek Valley. Timnah is right about here. Okay, so he's the father, Manoah, the husband. We talked a little bit last week. It seems like his wife was out and about working in the field. It seems like he was in the house. He wants to hear what the angel says himself. And so he asks and prays that he may have a visitation. And sure enough, the angel appears and tells basically the same thing. Says, your wife already knows what to do. Your son's going to be a Nazarite from birth. He can't cut his hair. He can't be around dead bodies or carcasses. He can't drink wine or any fermented drink or be around grapes. Those are some basic things, and that's what is being said right here. Well, in chapter 13, verse 23, it says, after the man saw him, he says, oh, that's the Lord, or we've seen God, we're going to die. Then his wife seems to be, you know, level-headed. She seems to be the one who initiates. She seems to be the one that is getting things done. And the one the Lord appears to the first time, she answers, if the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and grain offering from our hands, nor shown us all these things, or now told us this. So verse 24, the woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. And that name Samson, Beth Shemesh, the name, it refers to the sun god or something to do with the sun. Samson himself, the word can actually be just translated sunny. It means the sunny one, or it represents, again, something about the sun. A similar name that matches Beth Shemesh. He grew up and the Lord blessed him. Now, how he blessed him, we don't know the details, but he was blessed. The Lord is with him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he was in Mahaneah Dan, and that's this area, between Zoar and Eshcol, and that is in this area. He's growing up right in here. Now, it had said one of the messages the angel of the Lord had told the woman was, I'll begin to deliver Israel or Judah from the Philistines. So there's problems with the Philistines. They've moved in at this time in history. We know the sea people have come down from the north and they moved in from the sea. Some kind of a Greek culture is here, and that matches archaeology. It matches the description in the Bible, especially when you talk about Goliath. There's clearly a Greek influence right here. These are not probably the Philistines of Genesis. Abraham dealt with Philistines. These are a similar people or a group of people living in the same area, but a different culture that has moved in. Again, you can discuss that and not necessarily agree with that, but it seems to be the case. And they've come in here and they're putting pressure on Israel in their promised land. And so now God is going to start putting pressure back on them. but he's got a disobedient people. And this is really, I think, the theme of the book of Judges is you've got a people that have been called of God. They're in the land God called them to. God has fulfilled his promise to them, but they are ignorant of his plan, ignorant of his word, ignorant of his covenant. They've got some kind of memory, some idea in their history, a little bit about God, but it's been so overrun and combined with Canaanite religion and pagan practices, they really don't know what is the Word of God and what is pagan. They don't know what is the truth in God's covenant. And even they've confused the Lord Yahweh, we've seen, confused Yahweh with Baal. I mean, they're so many times in their views, at this time in history, Baal and Yahweh are the same God. They'll offer human sacrifices, they'll make vows, they'll follow Canaanite practices in following the Lord. They don't know any better. It's the fault of the people. It's the fault of the priests or the Levites who are supposed to be teaching it. But up in here, you can see on your map that I handed out to you, up in here, Shiloh's where the tabernacle's at. They're completely corrupt themselves. That's the home base of God's covenant and God's tabernacle. And the priests, the high priests, they're completely lost. And we can see that, especially when we turn the page and begin the book of 1 Samuel, how confused they are, and God is going to just eventually have to bring the Philistines in and shake the people up. Well, anyway, he says that Samson is going to begin to deliver the people from the Philistines. So chapter 14, verse 1. Remember, again, you think for yourself, and you can be judgmental, please be critical thinkers, but Samson is a man that God is going to use to fulfill his purpose, but Samson is a man who doesn't understand God's plan. He doesn't understand God. He's got a father who is pretty confused, I think, himself. So Samson's going to get no direction from his father. And so you're going to see God moving through Samson, but the only thing that he's going to have is Samson's own anger, Samson's own desire, Samson's own passions. And if God can't get... Guys like Samuel will come, and they'll make decisions based on what is right. Or guys like Moses, they had the capacity to make a decision based on the divine point of view, what God wanted, what God's will was. Samson is not one of these individuals. He can only be driven by his own passion. So God, I think, is going to use what he's got. He's got Samson's passion. So it's like, well, I want to beat up some Philistines, so Samson, let's go. Chapter 14, verse 1, Samson went down to Tibnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. So you can see from Zoar, goes down the Sorek Valley into Timnah. He sees a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. Now, their culture was the husband or the father would go then make a covenant, make a treaty. You know, he'd make an agreement and the two families would come together. But, of course, there's nothing in the practice of Israel, at least not supposed to be, of where the Israelites, instead of fighting the Canaanites and fighting the Philistines, go ahead and go marry them. It's like, in fact, they've been told not to marry them. Stay away from these people. Well, Samson goes over there and says, hey, I found a good-looking Philistine girl. I want her. Go get her for me. Well, here's the good side of his father. His father and mother are at least going to resist this. They say, this is not what we're supposed to do. Verse 3, his father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? We've got a whole land here. Isn't there somebody you can find? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? At least there's a little bit of resistance. But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. Now watch this, verse 4. Fit this into your theology. His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. They were, because again, Israel had pretty much just cowered down. They just submitted to him, whatever you want, it's fine, just give us peace and let us have our wine and whatever, and our television shows. And the Philistines were ruling over him. God says, that's not what I want. I want you people to rise up. So he's going to use Samson and his passion to cause some kind of a conflict. That says right there, God, the Lord was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines because his command to confront the Philistines wasn't good enough. He told them, don't accept this kind of rulership. You rise up and you are the people of God in the land. They're fine to compromise. They're willing to compromise as long as they had peace. God says, I don't want you having peace. I want you in a conflict. So, okay, I'll cause a conflict. I'll have one of your men go down here and fall in love or be passionate for a Philistine woman. That's how I'm reading this. You're free to keep thinking. They're not doing it the right way, so God says, I'll use your passion. I got to have a confrontation. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, again, they're going through the Sorek Valley, and over here there's some vineyards over here towards Timnah.
Suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. Now when it says a young lion, that doesn't mean a baby lion. That means a young male powerful lion. I mean, it's it's in its prime of life. I mean, it should have just tore Samson up. But Samson, and think about this, it's not like Samson has been shown off at high school, you know, bending bars of iron and lifting more weights than all the other kids on the football team. I think he's just a normal kid, apparently blessed by the Lord, going through his life, because I think this is his first confrontation or first occurrence where a lion, God has a lion jump out to attack him. And it's like, what do you do? Well, I'm not ready to be attacked by a lion. So he grabs him and has this surge of strength. I think this surprises Samson, you're free to think, as much as it does anyone. But he tears it apart like it's a young goat, like you prepare a meal with a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. So the main story here is he tore this lion. So now Samson knows, there's some kind of strength that I've got. That was not normal. Didn't tell his mom and dad. He's focused, wants them to stay focused on who? The young girl. He liked her too. Don't you like that word? Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. Verse 8, sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, which means I'm reading into this. This event had happened. He went down. He's more interested in the girl, goes down there. But he kept thinking about that. Wow, that was strange. It wasn't like something that happened every day. And he goes by and he kind of goes off, goes back. I wonder if it's still there. He goes over there and looks to see if the dead carcass is still there. And sure enough, it's there. Because of the dry climate, it had not deteriorated. But it now, instead of having maggots move into it, which would be normal, bees have moved into it, which is not necessarily normal. So he looks at this and goes, this is strange. So again, notice again, went down and he liked her. They agreed on a covenant. They set a date. He went back home. A little while later, he comes down. They're going to have now the wedding. He goes down, but on his way, he stops to see the carcass of the lion. Verse 8 of chapter 14. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. Again, it's a carcass, probably an indication of violation of a Nazirite vow. You shouldn't be touching a carcass, but maybe that's not a big deal. But he takes it and eats the honey. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it, but he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Oh, I found some honey. Oh, great. And finding honey here, you can see that pop up in several Bible stories in the Old Testament of finding honey, like Jonathan finds some honey, dips his staff in it, eats some honey. And different times they find honey from bees that made hives or whatever. But here they find it. Carcass, he doesn't tell his parents. Verse 10. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast there. Now, just in case if you wanted this word feast, it sounds nice, but it means drinking party. It means drinking party. It doesn't mean feast, this festival, and it means a drinking binge is what it means. And Samson made a feast there, as was customary for the bridegrooms. I can't imagine anything like this ever being part of our culture, where people would have a bachelor party and have a lot of drinking. But that's what they did at this time. I know, kind of a strange culture. I'm not sure where that came from. Strange people here. Yeah. And Samson made a feast there, and it was, as was customary for the bridegrooms. When he appeared, he was given 30 companions. Now, this is interesting. This would be his friends that would come along, but he doesn't bring his friends. Again, there's a lot to be thought about this. But, you know, first of all, where's his friends? Why doesn't his friends come with him? But he comes, he doesn't have any friends. Another way of looking at this right here, it could be, they could be bodyguards that were there to, or bouncers, or there to protect the drinking feast. In other words, to keep people from coming in that weren't invited. There's a big party going on. Everybody can kind of crash the party. This is to keep people out. But as we read this, it could be that these 30 companions were there to possibly protect the Philistines from Samson, or to keep an eye on Samson, who is a foreigner. But nonetheless, these 30 guys are unique. Either they're there to protect the feast, they're there to be Samson's guest because he has no friends, or they're there to kind of keep an eye on Samson and kind of keep things in check. But nonetheless, these 30 guys are in a sense, not necessarily normal that they're appointed to him. Now, he says, let me tell you a riddle. And so what he begins to do right here is instead of using them as friends or being nice to them or thanking them, he begins to use them for sport. He begins to, you know, and again, this may be part of the culture too of telling riddles, but he's going to tell them a riddle to try and fool them, outsmart them. He said to them, "If you can give me an answer within 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." Now, the 30 linen garments, that would be like some kind of rectangular undergarment. And then the sets of clothes would actually be feast clothes. They'd be like your Sunday best. They'd be like your best clothes. And they weren't common that everybody had like a whole closet full of Sunday clothes. This would be very unique to give out 30 sets of very nice clothes, buying 30 guys, 30 suits. So he says, I'll give you 7 days. So we know the feast is going to take 7 days. The drinking binge, the bachelor party, is going to take 7 days. And he says, if you can figure this riddle out in that amount of time, I will buy you 30 sets of clothes, or each of you gets a set of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. So you'll give me 30 suits. "Tell us your riddle," they replied. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the Eden," I remember the whole point of this is God is trying to create a confrontation. So when this goes bad, it's exactly what God wanted. When his wife betrays him, and these men get mad, and Samson gets mad, God says, "That's exactly what I wanted." God is not interested in Samson marrying the Philistine and having a nice party, a nice bachelor party, and such a nice wedding. It was such a nice wedding. That's not what God's interested in. He's looking for a confrontation with the Philistines, and he's going to mess this wedding up. God is planning on messing this wedding up. So just keep that in mind. It's not like something you'd think God would do. I think God would like nice flowery weddings with a nice speech on message on love or something. And God says, "That's not what I want. I want a confrontation. I want a bar fight right here," is what God says he wants. "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." You've got to admire how that translated even into English from ancient Hebrew. It's still got a little bit of rhythm, a little bit of rhyme to it. "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days, they could not give an answer. So they're really working on this riddle. And again, riddles were part of the culture. Verse 15, "On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, 'Coax your husband to explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death.'" Such great friends. "Did you invite us here to rob us? You brought us here, and now we're going to be, he's making sport of us. He's going to end up winning this. You got to figure out what the answer is. Otherwise, we're going to burn you and your father's household." Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing. This is one of many episodes where women are going to be sobbing or manipulating Samson. She says, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer." He says, "I haven't even explained it to my father or mother. So why should I explain it to you? No one knows the answer." She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. She ruined the whole bachelor party. So on the seventh day, he finally told her. Now again, one of the questions I'm going to have throughout this time is, why does Samson always break down in the end? You know, the story of Delilah. Why? I mean, she tricks you once, she tricks you twice, and then you go ahead and trust her the third time when he gets his eyes gouged out at the end. It's like, didn't you see this coming? Everybody sees this coming. A child in Sunday school saying, "Samson, don't tell her." And Samson goes, "Okay, I'll trust you this time if you say you love me." It's like, uh-huh. And it's right here. Waits until the seventh day, and she's still sobbing. It's like, okay. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. Well, she in turn explained the riddle to her people. Duh. "Before sunset on the seventh day of the day, the men of the town said to him," we've got it, "'What is sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion?' Samson said to them," now this is written exactly like this in the Hebrew, "'If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle.'" If you had not plowed with my wife, if you had not used my wife, you would not have gotten my riddle. In other words, he says, you use my wife to get my riddle. "Then the Spirit," and here it is, this is what the Lord is waiting for. "Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power." Samson had to get mad about something. "He went down to Ashkelon," that's down here, it's not on your maps, but it's south of Ashdod, just north of Gaza. He went down to Ashkelon, that's 23 miles away. Yep, yes, 23 miles away. So he goes from Timnah down to Ashkelon, 23 miles away. struck down 30 of their men. Again, this is an amazing feat. It goes into one of the five major Philistine cities. Goes into the city, walks in, finds five guys, not just five guys living on the street, or 30 guys living on the street, but finds 30 guys with their Sunday best on. These are prominent citizens with wealth, with money, with possessions, with nice clothes. Struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he went up to his father's house, meaning he went back to Zoar, and Samson's wife was given to a friend who had attended him at the wedding. So they had, you know, who wants to waste a good 7-day bachelor party? The man leaves, it's like everybody's ready, we got the priest is here, the bride's here, everybody's happy, everybody's had plenty of drink. Does anybody want to marry this woman? I'll marry her. Come on up. Married her, and now they're going to live happily ever after. That's a wonderful, wonderful idea right there. Because Samson goes home. So now his wife that he was so in love with is married to another man. Chapter 15. Later on, at the time of the wheat harvest, now this is May or June, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. Now this, again, sounds maybe strange to us, but this is an appropriate. These are flowers and chocolates right here. He brings a young goat. It's like, if I make up with my wife, she doesn't like chocolate, so I've got to, you know, buy her a bagel or something, you know, a bear claw from banana. It never happens. We've never argued really, dear, have we, that we didn't, okay. But, you know the flowers and the box of rose. I buy my wife flowers. I try to do it frequently. And every time I go to the store, I always feel like, I want to say, no, I haven't been fighting with my wife. I'm just buying her. What's the occasion? Not just going to buy her. Oh, sure, you had a problem. No, I'm just trying to buy her flowers. But anyway, flowers and boxes of chocolate would be something in our culture. In his culture right here, bringing a goat would be inappropriate because a goat is supper. It's like you're bringing a meal. So this is an appropriate makeup gift. Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, I'm going to my wife's room. But her father would not let him go in. I was so sure you thoroughly hated her, which he should have, you'd think. He said that I gave her to your friend. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Well, hey, she was the older sister. Check out the younger sister. Wouldn't you be interested in her? Now, this guy's trying to pawn off his daughters on Israelite Samson. It's just completely interesting or strange. Samson said to them, this time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. So he went out and caught 300 foxes, or jackals might be another term. Now that is still, I still don't have much more to say about that than he caught 300 foxes or jackals. I mean, it's like, how would you do this? How would you catch them? How would you store them? How would you put them in a cage and go get another one? Are you going to corral them? I mean, they're not normally animals that just kind of, you know, herd them into a little cage or something. But anyway, I don't doubt the story. I'm just wondering how this happened. And there's maybe more information somewhere that we'll find. So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. And who thinks of this? I mean, it's like, now this is exactly what I would do. I'd catch 300 foxes and tie their tails together. And then he fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. His whole purpose was, I want to destroy their crops because it's harvest time. And again, we were there in May and June, and we've seen the crops ready in this historic valley here. And what he does, he said, how can I destroy their crops? His idea, catch some foxes, tie torches to their tails, and let them just run. They're going to run like just, you know, wild foxes tied with tails tied together. They just run all over. And wherever those torches go, they're just going to just leave trails of fire. And this place is just going to go up in smoke. The whole Sorek Valley is going to go up in smoke. Again, what a great idea. He burned up the shocks and the standing grain, that would be the dry grain, together with the vineyards and the olive groves. He didn't just get the grain, but he tore up the vineyards are gone. When the Philistines asked who did this, they were told Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law. Again, he's from Zoar, but he had a 7-day feast with Timnah, the man from Timnah, for his daughter. Of course, Samson went home, but they're still saying this man here is his father-in-law. Now, that's not the way it is. who did this, Samson, the Tendonite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his friend. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. So she doesn't win and the father doesn't win in the end here. So the Philistines burned their own, one of their own families. Samson said to them, "Since you've acted like this, I won't stop until I get my revenge on you." He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. And then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam, which is in West Judah. So somewhere in here, we're not sure exactly where it's at, but it's over, this is Judah, this is the land of the Philistines, this is the land of Judah, so somewhere in this area here in western Judah is a cave, and after he fought and killed a bunch of men, he goes down and hides in the cave away from them, and what you're going to see, Samson's going to get isolated from the people of Judah and from the people of the Philistines. Obviously, we know why the Philistines don't like him, but you can anticipate why the people of Judah don't like, why this culture. You'd think that people of this culture, or of a different culture, would at least rise up and say, Samson's our hero, Samson's our man. But these people don't want what? They don't want conflict. They don't want confrontation. They just want peace. We just want to live our lives happily, leave us alone. And Samson is one of those. And so God's causing him to have a confrontation for personal reasons, because of his wife, because of what happened to his wife's family. Something, just to get him angry about something and get him engaged, because the people won't respond to God's command. So now, do the people of Judah appreciate Samson? No, because you're causing a confrontation. The Philistines don't appreciate him. The people of Judah don't appreciate him. So he goes up to the cave. Verse 9, "The Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lehi. The men of Judah asked, 'Why have you come to fight us?'" What? Again, here it begins. So now, all of a sudden, Samson's done some damage up here. He's hiding in a cave somewhere. And the Philistines march out into Judah. They bring their forces out. "We're looking for Samson." So the men of Judah send out their ambassadors. "Please, please, what did we do wrong? We don't want any kind of, we don't want war. What can we do to make you happy?" "Well, we're not mad at you. We're mad at Samson." "Oh, we're mad at Samson too." Nobody like, they don't like Samson, and the people of the Philistines don't like Samson. But the men of Judah do not want a confrontation. You've got to appreciate guys like Samuel and David when they come. In the next 100 years, when Samuel and David begin to arise, and David takes this same culture. Remember, David begins ruling or conquers Jerusalem in 1005 B.C. So right within about 100 years of this kind of a culture, David turns this culture into a military force. Is that not interesting? This culture that's filled with cowards, that doesn't want a confrontation with the Philistines, David subdues them, marches all the way to the Euphrates, conquers the entire, the whole, when Solomon gets the kingdom, the land is expanded and full of peace because of David's war with all the nations around. And everybody honored David. It's just kind of interesting that you can turn a culture around that fast. In verse 10, the men of Judah ask, "Why have you come to fight us?" "We have come to take Samson prisoner," they answered, "to do to him as he did to us." Verse 11, "Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, 'We are heart and soul with you. We will fight the Philistines with you.'" No. "Don't you realize what the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us? They're in charge, Samson. They're the bosses." He answered, "I merely did to them what they did to me." Do you hear any language in here about we are the covenant people of God? This is our land. We are responsible for God to take control of this land. It's like Samson, they said, "Why did you do this?" Because they're our rulers. Samson says, "I did to them what they did to us." It's all based on their own personal experiences, their own personal desires. The men of Judah want peace. Samson wants revenge. God's in the background going, "When do I get a piece of the action?" He can only work with people that are angry or whatever. They said to him, "We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines. We're ready to give up our national hero because you're not a hero. You got us into trouble." Samson said, "Swear to me that you won't kill me yourself." So he appears to be figuring some things out that somehow that he's to fight the Philistines, because he knows he's not afraid to be tied up and handed to the Philistines. He knows he can win that battle, but he doesn't know, it appears at least, "I'm not sure what would happen if you tie me up and try to kill me, and I've got to fight the people of God." I mean, he doesn't say it specifically, but he wants them to say, "You're not going to kill me. Let me face the Philistines. I'll kill them. They can't touch me. But I'm not sure if I can fight the people of Judah, because they'd be the people of God." He doesn't say that explicitly, but I wonder if that's in his words. Verse 13, "Agreed," they answered, "we will only tie you up and hand you over to them." we will not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes. Again, the best kind of ropes. Again, these are not easy ropes to break. These are, the new ropes would be made out of something that was fresh and green. That can't, if you ever broken a branch, an old dry tree branch, snap, it's easy to break. Or a green branch, it just keeps bending. It's so flexible, you can't snap it. It's hard to even saw it sometimes. But anyway, to think about cutting green lumber that's still wet. Verse 14, as he approached Lehi, we will not kill you. So they bound him in two new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came down toward him shouting him, their war cry. The whole Philistine army is attacking Judah's army, which is Samson. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. Once again, this is what the Lord wants. Again, this is not, again, I'm going to say this. God's plan, I'm reading between the lines here, so I could be wrong. God's plan is not to have Samson, the number one weapon of Israel, fighting the Philistines by himself. God's plan is to have Israel as a culture, as an army, as a nation, as a military, march and drive them out like Moses did. Did Moses go off and fight by himself? Did Moses fight Moab? Did Moses fight the Ammonites? Did Moses fight by himself? Joshua didn't. None of them fought. They were an army that moved together in unison under the direction of God's general. That's, I think, what God wants. God wants his military fighting the Philistines. But since no one will listen, Samson is the military. Samson is the only one that God's got. And the only way God can motivate Samson is get him mad about something personal. And so that's what's going on here. This is not, God's best is not to have Samson fighting the Philistines. God's plan, I think, would be to have the army of Israel fighting the Philistines. But that's not going to happen, not in this story. So it says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, Samson. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, meaning very, you know, brittle, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. And again, this is common. We see this in other, some of the judges did something like this. David's men are going to be known for this, of stepping up and fighting and defending a field by themselves. And here he's got a donkey's jawbone. It appears to be just something that he could find. He has no weapons. He just grabs whatever he can find, and it becomes a weapon in his hands. Then Samson said, he's always good on poetry here, with a donkey's jawbone I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone I have killed 1,000 men. So that's his little, might have turned into a song or something. When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramoth Lehi, which refers to, again, the jawbone. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, "You have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Then God opened up a hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he revived. So the spring was called En-Hakkor, and it is still there in Lehi. So interesting there. You do see Samson praying. That is interesting. Is that not interesting? He knows. He's figuring this out. Apparently, he figured out, I'm not to fight Judah. God's strength is to fight the Philistines. So he's very bold. Bring him on. Bring me the army. And all I need is a jawbone of a donkey. You can tie me up. Tie my hands behind my back and give me no weapons, and I'll still defeat the Philistines. He's confident of that. He does it. And when he's done, he's thirsty, obviously, because he gave out great physical strength. He has enough sense to pray to the Lord. It's a fairly decent prayer. I mean, you know, he's almost complaining. But you see Moses pray like that. You see other people pray like that. And God answers and opens up a place of water for Samson. So again, you have like this moment of Samson responding to the Lord hearing a prayer from Samson, and the Lord answering a prayer. Things that could be a turning point. I mean, that could be like some great things could happen right there. But I don't think they do. Chapter 16. One day, Samson went to Gaza. Now, that's 30, 35 miles away. That's down here. Gaza would be down here. From Zor, it's about 30, 35 miles further away. He goes down to Gaza. What's he doing? He's still, I mean, we're past Timnah, we're past Ashkelon. This is where he went and got Ashkelon, this is where he got the clothes. He's down even further into Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. Okay, now this is not a young girl from Timnah. Notice the difference. This was his first wife, if you want to call her a wife, was a young girl from Timnah. That, you know, a young man sees a young girl and is interested. Now he's not looking for a young girl. He's down with a prostitute in Gaza. I mean, there's no looking for a wife, no marriage vows, nothing. This is another whole level. He went to spend the night with her. Now, this is not spending the night with his wife, with the prostitute. The people of Gaza were told, Samson is here. Once again, if you will accept it or at least consider it, Samson is not down in Gaza to fight Philistines, right? Samson's down in Gaza. Why? Well, we just read why he's in Gaza. He's not down there to look for a confrontation. But God is still looking for a confrontation. So while he's down here, the people of the Philistines, they know Samson. He's caused them trouble from burning fields to killing 1,000 men. And now he's down here. They say, hey, Samson's here. Samson's here in Gaza. The people of Gaza were told, Samson is here. So they surround the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. Meaning, and you know the ancient cities, there'd be a major city gate. Sometimes there'd be more than one, but usually at least one major gate that they could get out. Now, we have seen the gate at Ashkelon. This gate right here, from this time period, has been excavated. We stood and looked at it. It's a mud brick. It's almost, you know, it comes almost up to part of the arch right there. It's a very nice remains of a gate from the days of the Philistines. And so it would be similar there. Again, there'd be a gate with the mud bricks, and there'd be some kind of a door that would swing on it. But we talk more about that here in a little bit. So now they're waiting. They don't go in and attack the prostitute or the wherever the house is at. They wait for Samson to leave. They know he's going to have to leave the city. He probably doesn't want to be there in the morning. They made no move during the night, saying, at dawn, we'll kill him. When we open the city gates, again, the city gates would be closed all night, so you're not going to get out. But when they open the city gates in the morning to let business go out and business come in, they figure Samson's going to be on the traffic, you know, going out. Just like in the mornings in Des Moines, you got traffic going out of town, very little, but a lot of traffic coming into town. And in the evening, it's the opposite. That's what's happening here. They're going to open the gates up, get the interstate started, people coming in, going out of Gaza. But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. So he doesn't wait until the interstate opens up, the gates open. He decides, I'm ready to go. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate. Well, they're not open, so he's going to take hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. So again, there'd be some kind of a framework going around the door. Then there'd be posts where the hinges would swing on. Then the doors would be closed. There'd be like a bar protecting it. So again, this one door would be the only way to get in. This would be the door that protected, because you can't break through the rocks or the rest of the structure of the wall. But this right here, the pivoting, the mechanical part, he grabs the post, rips that up. Now, when we talk about city gates, okay, we're not talking about something as, you know, huge. Although they'd be big gates, in Samson's case, they would be very reasonable, especially for a man like Samson, to pick them up and walk with them. Again, they're going to be too heavy for the average man to carry, but it's not like carrying a building or something. But they are large. He lifted them up to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Now, it depends on how you read this. Hebron is 40 miles away. Let's just say it's straight across here. It's one of the, here's the Dead Sea now. Well, I have to move Jerusalem over this way now. Getting all crunched up here. But Hebron would be over on this side if this is the Dead Sea. That's 40 miles away. Depends on how you want to read this and study this. Did he carry the gates 40 miles on a hill outside of Hebron so when they looked up they could see the gate right here? I mean, he could have. I mean, it would be part of the story. Or did he carry it through the plain up here to a hill, or further in the Judean city, somewhere along here, on top of a hill that faces Hebron? You know, it doesn't have to be right outside of Hebron, although you maybe want to read it that way. I don't know. I'm just saying there's different ways of reading where he carries the gate. I mean, you've already got the guy killing 1,000 men with a donkey's jawbone. You've already got him catching 300 foxes and burning up the fields. You've already got him doing supernatural things already. So, I mean, having him, you know, carry gates another 20 miles or 30 miles, I mean, just, you know, just deal with it. It's not that complicated. But anyway, let's read this. Some people have a hard time with trying to explain this. He lifted them up to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Once again, which hill that faces Hebron? I don't know. It gives the impression almost that he carried it into Judah. But I think that he carries them up there so that the next morning when they get up, they can see him and realize he's plundered our city. We've got no defense. Our gates are not a good enough defense against the army of Israel, which is Samson. Chapter 16, verse 4. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek. whose name was Delilah. Now, where's the Valley of Sorek? This is the Valley of Sorek. It runs between Zoar and Beth Shemesh, runs towards this way. So this is the Valley of Sorek. It's actually sometimes called a river because in the flood seasons it flows with water as the water from the hill country of Judah drains down into the plain, the coastal plain right here, which is the land of the Philistines, and drains into the Mediterranean Sea. So this is just a valley. Somewhere in this valley, he falls in love with Delilah. This is not his wife from Timnah. This is not the woman from Gaza. This is another woman. It's Delilah from the Valley of Sorek. So he's kind of in his hometown. Falls in love with her. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him." Now, this could be a Philistine woman, or they could have crossed over here into the Valley of Sorek somewhere. Depends on where she's at in the Valley of Sorek. But, you know, they go to her and they're going to negotiate with her. "We will give you money." Now, watch this. "Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." Now, that basically would be, I could just show you the math, somewhere between $11 million and $16 million. Okay? That's what they're talking about. Now, I don't care who you are, but 11 to, and again, I don't want to show the corruption of my own internal side, but anyways, $11 to $16 million, you're safe, dear. But I'm just saying, that's a ton of money, all right? Great, you know, where's his integrity? But it's like, I'm just saying, you know, it's like, you can blame Delilah here, but it's like, here's this Samson, who is he? I mean, you know, and 11, and that would, basically, 10 shekels, they were paid 10 shekels per day. So this would be the equivalent of 550 years of wages. 550 years of wages she's going to get for conquering Samson for the Philistines. Again, that's a chunk of money. I'm not saying I would sell out for that, but I sure wouldn't laugh at it. I would say, God help me if this is immoral, because that's a lot of money. But that's enough about me. Let's read on. And I know all of you are probably above anything like that. "So Delilah said to Samson, 'Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued.'" Tell me. Now, what a sneaky way of asking him. It's like, how can we tie you up and subdue you? I'm not going to tell you that. Samson answered, but he does. "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." Now, I'm not sure where he gets these answers from. I'm not sure what his game is. But is he giving hints? Right here. He's got 7 braids of hair. And 7, I mean, I'm making this up myself. It's like 7, is something about 7. Is he throwing her out a hint? I don't know. "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs," or this would be bowstrings. Again, this would be the green, fresh, the unbreakable. And they would be very hard to break. Because these are the fresh bowstrings would be the part that you pull back on a bow, and they can't snap because they're brittle. So they're going to have to take a lot of force. And they'd be, you know, very, very durable. He says, "If you tie me up with these, I'll become as weak as any other man." "Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him up with them. With the men hidden in the room, she called to him." So she's clearly saying, "I'll take the 11 million, please." So they deliver the 7 ropes. They're in a room hiding. She ties him up with them. Then she says, she even plays along. She doesn't just leave and then let them do their work. She's going to be part of it. She wants to see it. "Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. The Philistines are here. Oh, no." But he snapped the thongs as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. Again, that's interesting. Is that what you would think of? Have you ever held a string close to flame and pulled it? Not since I was a child, I don't think. They got in trouble for it. But it's like, I mean, it's interesting how their terminology, that's how we, there'd be other ways that we would use to describe it. But if you hold a string close to a flame and pull on it, that's how weak these bowstrings became. But he snapped the thongs as easy as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied. She puts him on a guilt trip. Well, you made me look like a fool, Samson. You know I look like a fool. I was going to get $11 million. But now, I look like a fool. I'm sorry, dear. I'm sorry. I mean, how's he playing this? He said, if anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, they can't have ever been used on anything else, I'll become as weak as any other man. I'm serious. Never. I've never been used before. This will work. Okay. So Delilah took new ropes and tied him up with them. Then with men hidden in the room, so she got them, they came, I got it this time. Now what happened to the other guys? They must have got beat up or something. So now you got guys hiding in a closet again. It's like, I'm not sure if I want to hide in the closet. It didn't work last time. Those guys are dead, you know? So that's like, yeah, you go hide in the closet. It's like, oh, this is not a good idea. So nobody really likes this. Then the men hidden in the room, she called to them, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then, we don't know what happened to the men, but we assume that they ran out of the room at least, scared, if not got killed. Delilah then said to Samson, until now you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Like it's his fault. I mean, what have you been doing to him, Delilah? You've been trying to kill him. Tell me how you can be tied. He replied, if you weave the seven braids of my head into the fabric of the loom. He's getting closer. Let's talk about my hair. Again, it's very long. It's never been cut, so he's got a braid. You know, the idea here, and I don't want to be wrong about this, but the idea that Sam's just had this long, flowing hair. I mean, my wife, she's got long hair, and if we go anywhere, she's got to, you know, it's going to blow. It's like this weaving hair. It's like, I don't have that trouble. I wished I had that trouble, but my wife won't let me color my hair long. I think I'd have super strength. But I got to keep my hair cut short. But, you know, the days of flipping your hair back out of your eyes back when it was cool. But, you know, if we go out in the wind, she's going to put a hat on, pull her hair back, something. She'll just walk around with wild waving hair. Neither did Samson. He didn't have long hair down his back and just this wild, you know, weave waving hair. He had it braided. You know, he never had cut his hair, but that didn't mean he had long hair. It would have been braided hair. And here it says right here. He describes it for us. If you weave the seven braids of my head into fabric. So he had all of his hair into seven braids probably tied up. So not like he had long hair. He had to deal with his hair. So he is keeping that part of his Nazirite vow. Seven braids of my head into the fabric of the loom and tighten it with a pin. I'll become as weak as any other man. So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the seven braids of his head. Now how does this happen to a man while he's sleeping? She took the seven braids of his head and wove them into the fabric and tightened it with a pin. So now his hair is woven into a rug while he was sleeping. How many of you have trouble sleeping at night? Think about this. Think about someone weaving your hair into a rug and you sleeping through it. Again, she called him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He awoke from his sleep and pulled up the pin and the loom and the fabric. Then she said to him, how can you say I love you? I mean, what does love mean? I mean, he was like, how can you say you love me? How can you even ask that question? Three times you've tried to betray me for $11 million. How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? You got to trust me. If this relationship is going to go two ways, Samson, you've got to learn to trust me. Can you hear that? This is the third time you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength. With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. Now, I'm not sure what kind of man this is, but I don't know what kind of men you are. But how many of us would still be in this relationship getting nagged until we basically committed suicide? It's like, okay, kill me. I mean, I think I would have left long before this. I would have left the first time, I think. But it's just this is an amazing, amazing story. So four times now. So finally, he's tired to death. He can't take her nagging any longer. Well, just leave. Just leave. Okay, he says. So verse 17. So he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head, because I have been a Nazirite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I'd become as weak as any other man. When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He has told me everything. Now, I've only got one idea on this, why he would have done this. And this is one of my theories. I don't have time to explain it in great detail. But it almost, again, I may be wasting your time with this. But I've wondered about this before. He knows she's going to betray him. Do you think, I mean, does he know he's going to get his head shaved tonight? He knows that, doesn't he? I mean, it's happened 1, 2, 3, now the fourth time. So why would you say this? I don't know. Unless you want to find out how strong you are. Because listen, how strong is Samson? We don't know. We know how strong the Lord is in Samson. Samson with the Lord can't be defeated. So where's his fanfare? There's no fanfare. I stand here, the Lord's Spirit comes on me, and I win every time. It's like, who's doing it? The Lord. This is one of those typical cases where all the glory goes to who? The Lord. How about you shave my head, and let's find out what happens to me. How much can I? And I wonder, again, I'm just throwing this out there. I don't know if I wouldn't even want to get into a debate on it. If that was, you ever wondered why Adam ate from the tree? I mean, it's like, Adam, you know the truth. You know the word. Don't do this thing. Eve just did it. It's not a good idea. You think that's got to do with it? You think Adam had to do with sex? Yeah, but there's more than one woman. A man like Samson, he doesn't need to stay with the woman in the Sorek Valley. I'm sorry. You're true. You're right, Jim. I apologize. You're right. Yeah. No, I apologize. I should not have. Yeah. No, but like Adam, I'm thinking, I don't understand why, I don't think Adam, because a lot, I guess the reason I'm talking, saying, responding to the comment about sex is because a lot of people think the fall and all that had to do with sex, and that the original sin was sex. You know, that wasn't the truth. I mean, that's another whole, and they get off for track. I guess my whole point was to say, I wonder if Adam, everything, how long did Adam live in the Garden of Eden? I mean, I know, 130 years, I don't know, how many years was everything fine? We don't know. Why didn't he just continue? Everything's fine. Why change? And I wonder if it was like, what would happen if, remember the temptation, you'll be as God, you'll have this chance, you'll know these things. It's like, you won't have to just be limited to what God has for you. You can find out who you really are. And I think maybe he crossed that line. It's like, found out who you really are. It's like, oh, I'm not much without God. And Samson's that same position here. It's like, with God, he can't be defeated. The only thing he's going to find out here is what he can do by himself. And again, maybe sex is involved in it. I suppose a lot of you could teach it that way. I mean, that's true. Obviously, sex. So yeah, but again, can he go anywhere else? Yeah. So anyway, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He tells it right here. He tells her everything. Yeah, maybe he's got a death wish. Verse 18, when Delilah saw that he told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He has told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. This time they bring the $11 million. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his head. And so he began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Now here, if you ever want to win a Bible bet, who shaved Samson's head? The answer, Delilah. Wrong. Who shaved Samson's head? A Philistine man shaved Samson's head. You'll win every time. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with silver in their hands. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair and so began to subdue him. And the strength, now notice right here, as he was supposed to subdue the Philistines and now it begins to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Isn't that interesting? Of all that Samson did, everything that Samson did, God stayed with him until here. I mean, down here in Gaza, all the things that he did, all of his attitudes, all of his lust, all everything. God saved him, but right here, when he broke this covenant right here, gone. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding in the prison, but the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Now, verse 23, we'll wrap this up. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." So organize a great party. All the five cities come together. They're going to have a celebration of Dagon, because Dagon, their god, has conquered Samson and his god. But his hair is growing, as you know. When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying, so they bring him out to make sport of him. "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain." When they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." And indeed, the word entertain means we want to play with him. We want to use him as a tool. We want him to entertain us, make fun of him. So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. Now, what he did, perform something, whatever, we don't know, but he's entertaining them. They're mocking him. When they stood him among the pillars, and again, this description here is fitting for what we see in archaeology also, is there are temples, and they'll have this base stone right here, and we saw the remains of some of these at Megiddo, at a temple, and other places, and on top of these would then be, these would be like the foundation stones, and on top of those would be like the pillars. If there'd be stone or sometimes wooden posts or, you know, trunks, and then on top of that would be more building and something, and they'd be close together to support. They'd be close together. So to have someone stand, and of course, if one goes, it makes the other ones weak, and some of them, they've been found at I'm trying to think where they were found at. They're 10 feet apart, exactly 10 feet apart. And so they've got Samson standing right here. Now, again, I realize 10 feet is maybe too far, but that's how close they were at other times. When they, verse 26, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them." Now, the temple was crowded with men and women, all the rulers of the Philistines, so all their government officials are there. This is the army of Israel has been captured. They were all there, and they're on the roof, on the second floor, on top of the pillars. There were 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord. Interesting. Again, he prays now. "O sovereign Lord, remember me. O God, please strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes that were gouged out." They pulled out his eyes. Then Samson reached towards the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on one, his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all of his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Now, right here, you know, we read about these guys' names are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, the heroes of faith, and the guy is just like completely out of touch. But right here, you can see him. He does his job. I mean, just like, again, I don't want to compare him at all, but just like Paul says at the end of his ministry, "I fought the fight, I've kept the faith, I've finished the race." Paul did what he was called to do. And Samson, not the same trail that Paul took, but in the end, Samson knows his purpose. He's willing to take his life and fulfill his purpose with his life, and that's what it is. And that might be why guys like Samson end up in the Hall of Faith, not because of their great life example, but because they were used by God, and that right here, he willingly submitted to God's plan in the end. Again, it's not a glorious story, but in a sense, it is a glorious ending. Realize that he's in fellowship with his Creator, knowing his purpose, that I'm going to die with the Philistines. Verse 31, "Then his brothers and his father's whole family came down to get him. They brought him back and buried him between Zor and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel 20 years." So all of this takes about 20 years. And he's brought back here and buried. There is an ancient tomb in this area from that time period that some consider to be the family tomb of Samson. Okay, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for your comments. Thank you, Jim, for your comment very much. Woke everybody up, woke me up. Thank you for coming, and again, I appreciate you being here. I'll pray and we'll be done. Father, do thank you so much for the truth that you've preserved for us. We again thank you for the examples here. We ask that your Spirit would bring these things to light in our own life. Give us wisdom, give us insight, and give us the experiences in our own life to demonstrate your wisdom, to demonstrate your Spirit and your calling in our own lives. Father, we do thank you again for being with us, and ask that you lead and guide each one of us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Hey, thank you.